All right, we're going to begin in chapter 8. Last week, just for a little bit of a quick recap, if I remember, Daniel's not here. There he is. Daniel had some disparaging things to say about women. Out of 1,000, he couldn't find one righteous one. So anyway, we won't get any further in that discussion, Daniel. If that's okay with you, we'll move on. So, all right, you have to read chapter 7, the last part, to get that little humorous thing for some, maybe not for others. So the book of Ecclesiastes, we're in chapter 8 now. I will say this, it's just been a wonderful study. And for those that are here now that haven't been a part of the study, it's just a real good book to go back to. It's so relevant for today. And there's so many things discussed that I think that in our deepest minds and our deepest thoughts, that there's things that sometimes we think about and maybe don't share. And with it, a couple things. A lot of it's talking about under the sun. It's the things that, how someone would view things without God. And I like what Brother Stone said last week about Solomon in this writing. He's just kind of talking out loud. He's working things through. He's not necessarily saying this is an absolute truth, but he's just trying to figure things out as he's going through life and the observations that he's making through wisdom, through pleasure, through all the different things that he's trying to figure out. And so he talks about things under the sun. And so those things under the sun we exist today with, because we're running through some of these same things. Some of us are still trying to find happiness under the sun. We're not including God at the level that we should in our lives, and our lives aren't where they need to be. And so some people are rich, some are poor. I mean, there's circumstances. Some have good health, some have bad health. But at the end of the day, what's God's perspective for you? Why are you here on this earth? Where are you going? What are you trying to do? And where's your focus? And that was Brother Joe's lesson last Sunday morning, was just on focus. What's your focus? Do you need to refocus? And so on. With that being said, we began last week, and we'll just kind of begin here in chapter 8 again. And we started talking about governments. But for just I want to go over to Romans chapter 13 just for a moment, so just to kind of peek into the chapter real quick. And then we're going to peek really quick as well into 1 Peter chapter 2. And so if you want to get both of those, because we're going to jump over to 1 Peter chapter 2 in verse 13. And then right now we're in Romans chapter 13. If everyone looks at their Bible, a lot of times they'll have a subject. What's the subject of chapter 13? Be subject to government. So Paul, when he gets to the latter part of his thesis on justification by faith, what it brings, what it means, he starts making practical application, begins in chapter 12, which characterizes the Christian. But he gets and he starts talking about things. He talks about here just in verse 1 of chapter 13 about, you know, let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. So if you're going against an established government, who are you going against then? God. We could look over here, and I'm not going to read all that, but if you go over to 1 Peter chapter 2 and 13, then you have the same thought that Peter's sharing. So it's mentioned a couple times in the New Testament, and when things are mentioned more than one time, do you think it's a subject of importance and things that we have to consider? And so he goes on to say here in 13, he says, submit yourself for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority or to governors and so on and so forth. He goes in verse 15 and say, for such is the will of God, that by doing right, you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. And there's other scriptures to reference. And even when Jesus was here, you know, there's when he was dealing with Caesar and such, you know, pay Caesar what's due Caesar. And what was Caesar doing with that money? Was it things to benefit Christianity? Was it things to benefit Jesus Christ? It was not. And so we have to consider such. Now, I don't want to go in discussions that sometimes we get. Well, what about the Revolutionary War back in 1707 and all those kinds of things? But to suffice to say, we're in Ecclesiastes. What is Ecclesiastes? What does Solomon have to say? Because now he brings up this topic in his writings here. And so in chapter 8, let's just go ahead and revisit this and just kind of, what do I want to do here? Let's just go verses 1 through 9. Since I began, who do we got here? Logan, we made eye contact. I did a cursory one. I'm just looking at you. Let's do it. Yeah, it is. It's okay. It's, oh, see? I wonder if you'd be ready for it. So Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and verse 1 through 9. And again, think about what Paul had to say. Think about what Peter has to say. Obviously, it's what God's saying because it's in the Bible. And let's consider this now at this moment.
Who is like the wise, and who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the hardness of his face is changed. I say, keep the king's command because God's oath to him. Be not hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand in an evil cause, for he does whatever he pleases. And the word of the king is supreme, and who may say to him, what are you doing? Whoever keeps the command will know no evil thing. Wise heart will know the proper time of the just way. For there is a time and a way for everything. Although man's trouble lies heavy on him. For he does not know what is to be, for who can tell him how it will be? No man has power to retain the spirit, or power over the day of death. There is no discharge from war, nor will wickedness deliver those who are given to it. All this I observe while applying my heart to all that is done under the sun. When man held power over man, when man had power over man to his hurt.
Okay, thank you. And this discussion isn't anything new about just man and authority. And there's someone's always an authority of somebody else, and there's always the chain of just there's someone's boss ahead of him. And of course, ultimately, God is the ultimate boss of all. And so what he's considering now is one's faithful submission to a king, to a governor, governing this authority. He's saying it's a sacred honor, isn't he? He's saying it's a religious duty, right? Rising up against the king is almost like rising up against God. And so it's interesting. I just have to go because we had gone through studies through Samuel and Kings. But let's just take that same kind of thought for a moment. It's always good to go in the Old Testament. Let's go to 1 Samuel 24, verse 6. In 1 Samuel 24, in verse 6. Now, in the context here, Saul realizes that David might take over his kingship. So what does Saul want to do with David? He wants to kill David. And so it's kind of a cat and mouse chase that takes place. It's an interesting read to see the least or the most here. So he says here in 1 Samuel 24, 6, because David is able to kill Saul. And if you think about it, was David in right to kill Saul? What was Saul trying to do to David? He was trying to kill him. So how would God or any of us justify the fact that if he killed, it was a bad thing to have killed him? I mean, so to me, it's a right thing. He's trying to kill him. You need to protect yourself. But here's David's response to this. He says, so he said to his men, far be it from me because of the Lord that I should do this thing to my Lord. The Lord's anointed to stretch out my hand against him since he's the Lord's anointed. David felt, and rightfully so, that who anointed and who basically picked the first king. Who picked the first king? God picked the first king. He picked Saul. How come he picked Saul? He almost picked someone that you'd think you'd pick. I mean, he wasn't some kind of scrub, was he? I may use the word scrub, but I just felt I'd use that word there. But if we go further in 26:9, it says the same thing happens here. He spares his life again. And just catching the latter part there, do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be without guilt? And so this is David. And there's other verses to go to. So just something to think about when we're going through this here. And, you know, he says, who is like the wise man? And back in chapter 8 and verse 1, who knows the interpretation of a thing or a matter? And he goes and stretches that idea of wisdom, that wisdom makes what? Makes the guy with the countenance that's not so well to a face that shines, right? The person that takes the knowledge and applies it, and the wisdom is that kind of person. And so he's suggesting that. And he says, keep the command of the oath before God. And don't be in a hurry to leave him. Do not join in an evil matter. and for he will do whatever he pleases. And we covered that. When a king was chosen in Samuel, there was a list of things that the king would do. Right? Samuel said, this is what all the king is going to do. And were all the things the kings were going to do good things? It was a list. Like, how could you even want to pick the king? Of course, we could say, why do you do what you do and do things you're not supposed to do? And we can have that conversation. But they chose that. He says, since the word of the king is authoritative, who will say to him, what are you doing? You know, back then, in particular, kings, if you go challenge the king, what could happen? Be put to death. And so he says in verse 5, he said, who keeps a royal command experiences no trouble, for a wise heart knows the proper time and procedure. For there's a proper time and procedure for every delight when a man's trouble is heavy upon him. So this royal command, these laws, so if you just go do it, you're not going to have much issues, right? Even in society today, and I realize we're in a democratic government, a little bit different than kings, but there, I believe there's still application. In fact, I'll ask that question. You know, in Solomon's wise counsel concerning a citizen regarding in regard for the king of the land, is that relevant for us today? Is it relevant when he's talking about a king here? Is it relevant for us today? I mean, because we're in a democratic society, we can vote people in, and you know, we're allowed to. You know, Steve knows. I mean, we could have our own say on matters. We could picket the White House. We're allowed to do freedom of speech. There's things that we can do within the government that allows those things. Not so much so on the days of the kings. Go picket in front of the kingdom. They're probably not going to last very long. Off with their heads. But is it relevant? Speak to me. Is it relevant? Or we're just going to say yes, because it's kind of rhetorical. I'll just go with yes. I think that you're all saying, hey, yeah, Tom, that's right. So just remember that when you're paying your taxes and you're obeying the speed limit. Okay, I'm just saying. Maybe we'll talk about that April 15th. All right, I will move on.
We have to do it, but we don't have to lock it.
There you go, all right. So you'll have a stern face then, I guess, when you're making your payments to IRS. This is interesting here when in verse 5 and 6 he talks about this the wise man, that he knows the proper time and procedure. And then he says it again in verse 6 that there's a proper time and a procedure for things when a man's trouble is heavy upon him. So what is the proper time and procedure? What's Solomon talking about? How would you know that? He talks twice about proper time and procedures. How do you know when the proper time is the procedure? What is he saying here? Okay. I think I could agree to that. A proper time and procedure. And if you think about things, a big part of what he's saying is that think about, and we'll cover some of it here in a bit, maybe not this class, we've already covered it. Does the wise person, the good person, always have this wonderful existence here on earth? No. But that's not the case. So if the king had done something, I don't remember all the stuff in Samuel that was being talked about, but took your flock from you because he was allowed to do so. The proper time and procedure then is to let the king do it and have patience. Wouldn't that be the case? Because he's the king. Otherwise, what would happen if you go against the king? Like about how the case of Ahab is probably a good case with, what's his name?
Naboth.
There it is. I remember now. Okay. I visualized. Thank you for the. Yeah, and the vineyard and stuff. And he wanted it. He wouldn't give it. It was his right. I mean, anyway, that being said, we know that I'm not going to get in that story. But the thing about all this is there's a proper time and things will work themselves out because God will allow judgment eventually to take place at some point. Yes, ma'am.
Around us, whether it's good or bad, you don't have control over everything. And
Yep.
What they can control and what they cannot. Think about.
Yep. And so let's go to James for a moment, because James says something here I think that's applicable to this particular part. It's Peter and then James. Ah, it's always between Hebrew and Peter's. I know that. So I want to be in James chapter 4, chapter 5. James chapter 5. He's talking about the misuses of riches and things here, but he has something to say here. He says, "Behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you cries out against you. And the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. You have lived luxuriously on this earth and led a life of self-indulgent, right? Wanton pleasures. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and put to death the righteous man. He does not resist you," right? There's what happens. He's making a point there. The righteous man in this case gets stepped on. Things are happening. What is he to do in that? Right? For the proper time and procedure. It goes on where he would say in 7, "Be patient, therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. Behold, the farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains. You too, be patient, strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand." And so for all of these things and people doing evil to others and such is going to happen on this earth. And so part of all of it is to you just have to kind of persevere through it and realize that God has something so much better than anything you'd ever realize on this earth, which is, we can talk about, we can high five, but when people are going through it, it's just not that easy. When you go through major difficult times, but I don't know what else to say other than we just have to go to God's word and we have to pray about these things, and we just have to remain focused in this area. At some point, something will give. And he's mentioned it before. He said, "The righteous man dies early and the wicked lives longer." What's your observation? It's okay to be wicked. Hey, this person's been wicked, you know, he's 89 years old. And he did whatever he wanted. But at some point it gives. The righteous is, you know, in paradise. Right? That's where we're at. So we have this lesson from Ecclesiastes. We see James have to say, but there's a time for everything under the sun, right? And his contention's always been this, that God will judge both the righteous man and the wicked man, for a time for every matter and every deed is there. Chapter 3, verse 17 of Ecclesiastes. Even God patiently waits until the sin is ripe and fully on the vine. Man would like what? The punishment to fall on someone right now. Punishment to fall on that evil king or this evil neighbor. But that's just not always the case. However, the wise heart recognizes that such judgment will come with certainty and thus tunes all of the thoughts and activities outside of all of that. It is at the fountain of patience and deep conviction in the justice of God that he drinks. I like that. I read that again. The wise heart recognizes that such judgment will come with certainty and thus tunes all of his thoughts and activities to this channel. It is at the fountain of patience and deep conviction in the justice of God that he drinks. The mindset of the Christian, he obeys his authority even though he might be wronged. He exists in his life and things happen around him, and he perseveres being the Christian that he ought to be. And then realizes that at some point God will have judgment on all. Any thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Resolving a dispute.
Yep. Yeah, so there's that's the course of, I mean, under the, when Moses was in charge there, I mean, as they're wandering and as they're eventually making their way to the promised land, he needed help. They would have judges and people in place to deal with, because he couldn't do everything, that would have to deal with disputes. I mean, even the kings themselves. Remember the one story of the baby who died, and the other person took the other person's baby and came, I think it was before Solomon, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure that was the king, but he basically said, well, to solve the matter, I'll just rip the baby in half. And then the mother of the child said, no, have you keep the baby, which he knew then. The other one was saying, yeah, split the baby in half, which a mother probably would not say that. And so, but there's things, and there's a course of action. But at some point, it is what it is when the judgment's made. And then you have to live by that. And being that way, though, in verse 6, you know, at the latter part, when a man's trouble is heavy upon him, what does he do? There's a proper time and procedure for things. So just things to think about. And again, I know we might have maybe a little different circumstances today, but still the main important thing is, you know, we're going to have elected a president and we need to obey the laws of the land. There you go. Now, if it goes against God, like if the laws of the lands were to kill babies, I think then at that point we're going to go to God's higher law and that would supersede. But let's move on. Any thoughts or comments on this? Okay, so let's move on here. So, if no one knows what will happen, who can tell him what will happen? I mean, that part of it is that you don't even know. We're stuck in what you just see here. There might be a bigger purpose. You know, all things work to the greater good of God. I really butcher that, Romans chapter 8. All things work towards the glory of God. Is that right? How that verse goes, chapter 8, latter part. All things work for... Yeah, there you go. And no man has authority to restrain the wind with wind or authority over the day of death. And there is no discharge in the time of war, and evil will not deliver those who practice it. Another thing, too, to consider, too, it's just not paying back evil for evil. So even an unjust ruler has the final say over his domain. It is not right for a subordinate to question his decisions. The king will punish any appearance of evil. Lack of submission, lack of respect, rebellion, I hate when I get stuck. I think Charles had the lesson, he couldn't say a word, and anyway, I got stuck there. But improprieties, thank you very much, because the king will deal with it. It is wise to respect the king's power and not to rebel against it, you know, especially for no good reason. Okay? And so the point being is that, you know, there's a truth here, conspiracy, rebellion, insurrection against the king who has made an oath before God upon coming into his office is evil in itself. And so all subordination then becomes against God and authority. Since no one has the ability to know the future, it's illogical to question authority as if you even knew. And he makes that point we just read. And so evil will not deliver evil who practice it in verse 8. Evil will not deliver those who practice it. Using wicked means to overcome a wicked king is self-defeating. It offers no deliverance from wickedness. In fact, evil cannot deliver anyone. Evil is evil. You're against God. It's just you can't do it that way. Okay, let's continue on here in verse. Let's go to verse 10 here. Where are we at? And he's verse 9, just to kind of close it out. All this I've seen applied by mine to every deed that's been under the sun, where a man has exercised authority over another man to his hurt. He's seen it. That's how it exists, and it's probably never going to change until this earth is done. Now let's go ahead and read verses 10 through 15. From this way. And Jonathan, would you like to read this evening?
Sure.
Okay. We're in Ecclesiastes, and which I think everybody knew, duh. Okay. 10 through 15. Chapter 8, 10 through 15.
Then too I saw the wicked buried, those who used to come and go from the holy place and receive praise in the city where they did this. This too is meaningless. When the sentence for a crime is not quickly carried out, the hearts of the people are filled with schemes to do wrong. Although a wicked man commits a I know that it will go better with God, with God-fearing men who are reverent before God. Yet because the wicked men do not fear God, it will not go well with them, and their days will not lengthen like a shadow. There is something else meaningless that occurs on earth. Righteous men who get what the wicked deserve, and the wicked men who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. So I commend it. I commend the enjoyment of life, because nothing is better for a man under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany him in his work all the days of the life God has given him under the sun.
Okay, thank you. And again, he's just talking through these things and the perspective and what he sees, that the righteous man has these things happen, the evil man, like, what's going on? And so we get to this part, you know, he's basically, it's a further exposition on the one who practices evil deeds, right? So there's seemingly some paradoxes here in God's dealing with the righteous and wicked as far as under the sun, as you observe, right? God allows the wicked in this context, royal and or religious authorities, to practice their wickedness. Yet their wickedness does not save them from death or extend their lives appreciably. And so it's just what it is. These things exist. It happens. And it's not that God wants that to happen. He's given people plenty of opportunity. There's been many a wicked person that has changed their lives. And there's been many that hasn't. There's been many good people who became wicked at the end. I mean, that's just how life is. And so God doesn't necessarily bring speedy judgment against the wicked. So what impression do you have? What impression do people have? Right? People have had bad things happen to them, and because of it, they've just like, God, why did you allow this happen to my child? Why did you allow this happen to me? I'm a good servant. I'm here every Sunday. I do all these wonderful things. And in their mind, they reason incorrectly. Yet the wicked life remains inferior to the conduct of a righteous man, since both good and bad things can happen to either a wicked man or a righteous man, who in this sense will not have an advantage over the other. It is better to be righteous and enjoy the simple pleasures of life than to be subject to oneself to the vain and self-destructive toils of the evil, vengeful, and self-serving life. I mean, there's certainly that. And so he expresses these things. He says, what men commonly think, it appears that the wicked will escape judgment. But Solomon understands that this is not going to be true, the vanity or futility of this. And what's Malachi chapter 3, right? Remember this, I did a lesson on a whole bunch of Malachi verses and just went through the whole thing. But in Malachi, that you're going to see something here, because this is kind of the same similar thought here. In Malachi, in chapter 3, in verses 13 through 15. Tyler, you want to get that for me? In Malachi, chapter 3, verses 13 through 15.
Your words have been arrogant against me, says the Lord, yet you say, what have we spoken against you? You have said, it is vain to serve God, and what profit is it that we have kept his charge, and we have walked in mourning before the Lord of hosts? So now we call the arrogant blessed. But not only are the doers of wickedness built up, but they also test God and escape.
Yeah, so seemingly, again, that's how they're viewing things. You know, what's the point? We do all this, and what's the point all of this? Right? It is vain to serve God. What profit is it that we have kept his charge? And we walked, we did all this thing. What am I getting out of this whole life? Doesn't seem to be going really well. Right, that was the book of the Hebrews' contention to those that were Christians wanting to go back to the old law. Hey, this Jesus Christ situation, this Savior situation, aren't our lives supposed to be better? Aren't things supposed to be white picket fence and beautiful flowers and green grass? And again, people start reasoning through those things. They don't understand. And so those are things that we have to, and that's where our faith comes in God, that realizes that all things at some point will work themselves out. You just got to hold the course. So with that, when you read like verses 10 through 15, which we just read through, does the question is, does this passage help us have a better understanding of God's justice versus man's vengeance. Even so, why does God allow injustices to continue, especially to the hurt of his faithful people? Do we understand God's justice versus man's vengeance here? And why does God allow it, especially to his people?
Think about how much control he would have to take. You basically have to take away man's free will.
Yeah.
He was protecting everybody and stopping all evil.
Yeah.
It would just disrupt everything.
Yeah.
It's all going to be taken care of in the end.
Yeah. Perfect. And Paul talks about the race. Paul, did I look like I was having issues? You saw me running the other day? Yeah, I wasn't having fun. Actually, it took about 2 days for me to feel better, actually. But anyway.
We were a little worried about you.
Yeah, it was a tough one. That was like mile 13 or something. Go ahead, Bill.
This thought is kind of the basis of the Epicurean riddle, which is an argument against the existence of God.
Yeah. No, it is. Yeah, it is. Evil, suffering. And I had a lesson one time talking about the divine hiddenness of God. Like, why does God seem so far away? And partly that what Paul talked about free choice is if God was right upon you and just basically, like, if you leave here today and he was in the back seat and you could see God, would you totally obey the speed limit? Right, if you walked outside the door and God was right in your, so all of a sudden there wouldn't be free choice anymore in that sense. So God's separation from us is just the right amount. So you have to think about those things and you can reason through these thoughts and come to a very solid conclusion that God does exist and how everything's set up is perfect in every possible way. And again, you challenge yourself. If you were God, how would you have it? Well, nobody would get hurt, or nobody would. Okay, now basically everyone's under mind control, and now you're forcing someone to love. What's love ultimately is someone's own choice to love, and so because of it, things happen and such and so on. We've had these apologetic type lessons on all these kinds of topics, and of course Charles covered some through his series on Sunday night, and so we continue on then. And he goes into verse 16, he says, "When I gave my heart to know wisdom and to see the task which has been done on earth, even though one should never sleep day or night, and I saw every work of God, I concluded that a man cannot discover the work which has been done under the sun. Even though man should seek laboriously, he will not discover. And though the wise man should say, I know, he cannot discover." And so the thought that he's sharing here in this particular spot is despite all of man's wisdom, he cannot make perfect sense of all that goes on in the world. Again, this is the undersun discussion as someone looks at it. Doesn't as much knowledge. I mean, there was that was a point in time. I'm trying to just recall a thought here, but as far as that man at one point felt that if he could know more about things, he'd almost be his own God. Like there's a part, I don't know if it was the 1400s, 1500s, there's a point in time where man just said, you know what? Wisdom's the answer. If we could know all these things, right? Did man know all those things? To this point, does he know all these? He doesn't. And so, despite all of man's wisdom, man still cannot comprehend the full scope of God's final justice for such an unjust world. Man cannot discover or solve all the mysteries of what appears to be contradiction in God's dealing with people. Now, why did he deal on a visual side back, if you live in the times of the Old Testament, where they saw what happened to the people of Israel? Like, we're God's chosen people. What's going on? And they just couldn't tell. I'm like, hey, why are these Gentiles a part of all of this now? They're the enemy. Weren't we supposed to go to the land of Canaan and kill all those people anyway? And now, what's right? But the wild branch was grafted in. That was God's plan for the beginning, that all would be able to make it to heaven and be with God. And so he's covering these things, but the bottom line, we cannot. And so in verse 16 and 17 then, so the question is why did these thoughts actually prepare the heart to depend upon God? Not just for answers to vexing questions, but for the salvation of one's souls. I mean, how does this prepare our thoughts when we look at these things that we can't know everything? Right? That's our faith in God. And so, why do these thoughts actually prepare the heart to depend upon God? Not just for questions, just for now, but what about salvation of one's soul? That God's in control, God's in charge. And I have to give it upon him. You know, given the choice at the end, when you die, I mean, a reason, when you look at the argument of evolution and atheism, whatever, and you put it and you stack things up, there's still a higher level of God's existence, right? Bill, you would agree with, I mean, obviously you're here, otherwise you wouldn't be, that there's a higher existence of factual evidences and arguments and such that bring up believing in God to be a greater thing to do than not. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, bring your arguments. I've seen all these debates, Paul.
It's not even close.
There you go. See, Paul's saying it's like this. So, but when you read these things that, you know, I've, even as for those that have been around a while, that you've seen all these things and you just don't know. I mean, they're constantly... new things come up, new ideas, new things, and just constantly, right? But there's nothing new under the sun. We already covered that early on. There's nothing new under the sun. It's all been dealt with before. And so in this monotonous situation, but for the Christian, it's not so. Trying to help people, help ourselves, help our families, make it to heaven, and bring along all that we can, and to help them appreciate God, have them stop for a moment, think of their mortality. Right, you realize I was thinking that in my business, I'm probably up to like, I don't know, 150, 170 death claims. I'm dealing with three now. And they're, you know, when I get those calls, that person's done. Where are they at? I think about that. Are they going to, what, that's done. They can't redo it. There's no do-overs. It's done. What was your life up to that point? How are they going to be remembered? How will God remember them? Abby? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's the same concept on a spiritual level.
Yeah.
We can't know everything that's going on, what God's dealing with.
Yeah. But the one thing we can know, because John talks about it, that we know we can have salvation, that we can know that we're on the path of righteousness and that we can make it to heaven. God says that we can know those things and that we have confidence and we don't have to be waffling. But we tend to do that with our lack of faith. But there's enough, I mean, again, you got to spend time in this. You know, I spent, you know, some of the things for me personally, the book of Hebrews and the book of Romans were big things in my own, on my own walk, but also some of the studies we talked about even last week, or just even outside things, looking around other evidences and such. So if you're in that waffling position where you're just not giving all that you want to God, then maybe you need to step back and start doing a little bit of homework and remind yourself. At some point, you're going to have faith because that's what God says. It's just how it is. But you can have enough evidences to have that. I mean, it's so funny because we want to know everything about God just before you make it. You don't want to give too much because you're just like, well, there isn't a God, and I could have done all these things. But all the things that you wanted to do just aren't things that bring happiness. Right? Solomon's telling us that. That's not happiness. So you're just having faith, and something will give it. And all of us in our lives, something gives at some point. And when it does, where are you at with all that? So anyway, things to think about.